Hey everyone, welcome back. It's time for another deep dive.
Ooh, exciting.
Today we're looking at a landmark case, Auerbach versus Bennett.
Oh yeah, that one's that's a classic.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting for our listeners.
Definitely. It really gets into some...
It's a story of bribery lawsuits and a special committee that raises some eyebrows.
You know what's really fascinating about Auerbach? It shows just how complicated the power dynamics can get inside a big corporation.
Hmm.
Like when a company gets hit with these accusations of doing something wrong, then they're the ones who get to decide if they should sue themselves.
Yeah.
It's like who watches the watchman kind of thing.
Yeah.
So let's back up for a second.
Okay.
Paint us a picture. What exactly went down with this company, GTE?
Yeah, set the scene for us.
Right. So imagine it's the 1970s.
Okay.
And we've got General Telephone and Electronics Corporation.
GTE.
Yeah, GTE. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
They were this massive telecommunications powerhouse back in the day. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Behind all the corporate success, there was a little problem.
Oh, no.
An internal investigation uncovered this whole web of bribes and kickbacks.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. They were paying off foreign officials.
Wow.
To win business deals. It was happening for years between 1971 and 1975.
So basically, they were greasing palms to get ahead.
Pretty much. And of course, news like that doesn't stay secret forever.
Right.
A shareholder named Auerbach found out what was going on and decided he wasn't going to just sit back.
So this is where it gets interesting, right? Because Auerbach didn't sue just for himself. He filed a derivative lawsuit.
You got it. That's a key distinction.
Yeah. Can you remind us what makes a derivative lawsuit so different?
Absolutely. So in a regular lawsuit, you're suing because you've been personally harmed, right?
Right.
A derivative suit flips the script. The shareholder, in this case, Auerbach, he steps up and sues on behalf of the company.
The company itself.
Exactly. Because the company's the one that's really been hurt by the actions of... You know, usually the directors or officers.
So it's like Auerbach saying, hey, the directors messed up and it's GTE that's paying the price.
Exactly. He's trying to make things right for the company as a whole.
That makes sense.
It's a way for shareholders to hold those directors accountable.
Especially.
Especially when the company itself might be hesitant to rock the boat.
Yeah, definitely. So how did GTE respond to this lawsuit? Did they fight back?
Well, you'd think so, right? But instead of gearing up for a legal battle, they did something pretty unexpected.
Okay, what did they do?
They formed a special litigation committee, or SLC for short.
Okay, and SLC, what's that?
It's basically a group tasked with investigating Auerbach's claims.
Hold on a second.
Hmm.
Isn't this the same board that's being accused of all this wrongdoing?
Yeah.
And now they get to appoint a committee to decide if they should be sued. Something doesn't seem right there.
You hit the nail on the head. It's a huge conflict of interest.
It is. So how can this committee... appointed by the very people being sued, be truly objective?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most controversial aspects of this whole case.
So what did this SLC decide to do?
Well, after looking into everything,
they
came back with a recommendation that sent shockwaves.
Oh.
They basically said pursuing this lawsuit against the directors was not in the best interest of GTE.
Wow.
And they pushed for the whole thing to be dismissed.
And what happened? Did the court just go along with that?
Surprisingly, yeah. The lower court actually agreed with the SLC and dismissed the case initially.
Really? They just took their word for it?
Well, it wasn't quite that simple.
Yeah.
This thing bounced around the legal system for a while.
Okay.
Another shareholder, Wallenstein, appealed the dismissal.
Yeah.
And the appellate division actually reversed the decision. So the lawsuit was back on.
Okay.
But then it went all the way up to the highest court in New York, the Court of Appeals. Mm-hmm. And that's where things took another turn.
So it sounds like the courts weren't just blindly accepting the SLC's recommendation. They were really grappling with some big questions here.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the core legal issues at the heart of Auerbach versus Bennett. The Court of Appeals had to figure out, you know, what are the limits of their authority in these kinds of situations?
Right.
Can they or should they question a company's decision to shut down a shareholder lawsuit?
Especially when there's this SLC involved.
Exactly.
Right.
Tricky situation.
So we've got a bribery scandal, a shareholder lawsuit, and this controversial special committee.
Buckle up.
Yeah, this is getting good. We'll dive into the Court of Appeals decision and all the legal principles at play when we come back. Okay, so let's get into the legal reasoning behind the New York Court of Appeals decision in Auerbach v. Bennett. What were the key legal principles that the court had to consider?
Well, you can't talk about this case without talking about the business judgment rule.
Ah, right, the business judgment.
Yeah, it's like a cornerstone of corporate law. It basically says, We're going to assume that directors are acting in good faith. You know, it's in the best interest of the company when they make decisions.
Right.
Courts don't want to be second guessing every business decision. So this rule gives directors some breathing room.
I remember the business judgment rule being a real head scratcher back in law school.
Oh, yeah. It can be a tricky one.
So how did it apply to the SLC's decision to dismiss the lawsuit in Auerbach? Did the court just say business judgment, case closed?
It wasn't that simple. The majority opinion written by Judge Jones took a more nuanced approach.
Mm.
They said, look, the business judgment rule does protect the decision itself.
Okay.
Meaning the court couldn't just substitute their own judgment.
Right.
They couldn't say, well, we think the lawsuit had merit, so you shouldn't have dismissed it.
So even if the court thought the bribery allegations were serious and the lawsuit had a good chance of winning, they were stuck with the SLC's call.
Pretty much. They had to respect the SLC's decision.
Mm.
The court really emphasized that their role wasn't to micromanage every business decision a company makes.
Okay, so it's not like a get-out-of-jail-free card for the board.
Right. It's not a blank check.
What kind of scrutiny can the court apply in these cases?
The Court of Appeals basically laid out two key areas where they can step in.
Okay, I'm listening.
First, they can take a hard look at the independence of the SLC members.
Right, because they were appointed by the same board that was being accused of wrongdoing.
Exactly. And the court made it clear that true independence is crucial. It's not just about appearances.
Yeah.
It means no financial ties, no personal relationships, nothing that could compromise their judgment.
So they have to be completely free from any influence by the directors they're investigating.
Precisely.
Okay, that makes sense. What was the second area of scrutiny?
The court also said they can examine how the SLC actually conducted their investigation.
So did they really do their homework?
Exactly. Did they interview all the right people? Did they review all the important documents? Was it a thorough investigation?
So it's like the court is saying, we'll trust your judgment, but show us your work.
Precisely proof to us that you did your due diligence.
This is making a lot more sense now.
Mm-hmm.
So the New York Court of Appeals basically said, we'll defer to business judgment, but only if the process leading up to the decision was fair and above board.
You got it. That's the gist of the majority opinion in Auerbach.
Okay.
But it's important to remember, not everyone on the court agreed with this approach.
Right. There was that dissenting opinion wasn't there. Chief Judge Cook.
Oh, yeah. He had some strong words for the majority.
It seemed like he was really concerned about the potential for conflicted directors to basically escape accountability.
He wasn't convinced that just looking at the SLC's process was enough to protect the shareholders.
Mm.
He thought the majority's approach could let those conflicted directors get away with things, even if they followed all the right procedures.
So he wasn't buying the whole trust the process argument?
Not entirely. He argued that the court shouldn't just assume everything is on the up and up.
Right.
Just because there's an SLC involved.
So he wanted more digging, more fact-finding before making a decision.
Exactly. He thought a more rigorous investigation was needed to really figure out if the committee was truly unbiased and if their investigation was truly thorough.
This is fascinating.
Mm.
We've got these two different perspectives within the court itself, both raising valid points.
Definitely highlights the complexity of these issues.
Yeah, sure. So how does all of this connect to our listeners? What are the real-world implications of Auerbach v. Bennett for these shareholder derivative suits and the use of SLCs?
That's where we need to zoom out a bit.
Okay.
To really understand the impact of Auerbach, we got to compare it to a similar case decided in Delaware's Zapata Corp. v. Maldonado.
Oh, yeah. Delaware, the state of incorporation.
Right.
So we've got a New York case and a Delaware case.
Yep.
Both dealing with SLCs.
Yep. And the Delaware Supreme Court took a slightly different approach, which is crucial for understanding this whole landscape of shareholder derivative suits.
Okay. A legal showdown between New York and Delaware. Let's get good. Tell me more about this Zapata case. How does it stack up against Auerbach?
Well, we'll have to save that for next time.
A cliffhanger.
You know it.
All right. You've piqued our curiosity. We'll be back soon to break down the Zapata case and see how it compares to the Auerbach precedent. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. We left off talking about Auerbach versus Bennett and how the New York Court of Appeals basically said they'd trust a company's decision to dismiss a shareholder lawsuit as long as their special litigation committee followed the rules.
Right, followed a fair and thorough process.
But you mentioned another case, Zapata out of Delaware.
Oh, yeah, Zapata.
And you said it really changed things when it comes to these shareholder derivative suits.
It did. Zapata Corp. v. Maldonado really shook things up.
Yeah.
The Delaware Supreme Court decided to handle these SLC cases a bit differently.
Okay, so it's not just about whether the SLC did their homework.
Well, that's still part of it.
What's different in Delaware?
So in Delaware, they have this two-step process for looking at an SLC's decision to dismiss a case.
Okay, a two-step process.
Yeah.
Interesting. What's the first step?
The first step's similar to New York. The court looks at how independent the committee members are and how thoroughly they investigated the claims.
So the same, did they do their homework?
Yeah.
Analysis.
Exactly. But here's the twist. If the court's happy with the SLC's process, they move on to a second step.
Ooh, a second step.
Biscuit.
This is where it gets juicy.
Right.
What happens in step two?
This is where Delaware gets really interesting. In the second step, the court uses its own judgment to decide if the SLC made the right call.
Wait, so even if the SLC seems totally independent and they did a thorough investigation, a Delaware court can still say, we don't think dismissing this case is the best thing for the company or the shareholders.
Exactly. They don't just automatically accept the SLC's recommendation.
So they're taking a much more active role.
Definitely. They're looking out for the shareholders' interests.
That's a big difference from New York. So in New York, it's all about process. But in Delaware, they go further and actually evaluate the decision itself.
Yeah, got it. You could say Delaware is a bit more skeptical of SLCs. They recognize that even a committee that seems independent could still be swayed by the board that appointed them.
Makes you think. So for our listeners out there, if you're a shareholder, does it matter if you're dealing with a company in New York versus Delaware?
Absolutely. Which state a company's incorporated in makes a big difference for your rights as a shareholder, especially when it comes to derivative lawsuits.
So in New York, you got to make sure those SLC members are squeaky clean and did everything by the book.
Right.
But in Delaware, the courts have more power to step in and make their own judgment call.
Exactly.
Wow, this has been really eye-opening. I never realized there was so much to know about shareholder lawsuits and these special committees.
It's definitely a fascinating area of law.
It is. It seems like it all comes down to finding that balance between giving the board authority and protecting the shareholders.
Exactly. Yeah. Both Auerbach and Zapata bring up some important questions about who really has the final say in these situations. Does New York's approach give too much power to the boards and leave shareholders vulnerable? Does Delaware strike a better balance? And what does all this mean for using shareholder derivative suits to hold companies accountable?
So many questions.
These are questions that legal experts are still debating today.
Wow, you've really given us a lot to think about. This deep dive has been quite a journey. From bribery scandals to special committees to this legal battle between states.
Glad you enjoyed it.
Thanks for breaking it all down for us.
My pleasure. And to all our listeners out there, keep those legal minds sharp. We'll see you next time.